Picture a single-aisle aircraft, the kind you fly short hops in, the kind most of us associate with the regional and domestic shuttle grind. And now imagine it doing the work of a wide-body on routes that airlines used to reserve for jets with two aisles and significantly more fuel burn. That's the promise Airbus made when they drew up the A321XLR. And this week, Air Canada started telling us exactly where they're going to put it. I'm Tower, and this is ATIS on Radio Hangar. Let's get into it. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins built to mark the milestones, discipline, and pride behind every step in flight. From first solo to airline transport pilot, every coin tells a story. AviationSoul.com, now. Air Canada. They've just announced they'll be deploying the Airbus A321XLR on three routes into the United States, Los Angeles and Miami among them. And if you're a general aviation pilot and you're thinking, why does this matter to me? I want to give you the answer. Because what is happening right now in commercial aviation is a fundamental shift in how airlines think about range, efficiency, and the economics of thin routes. And that shift has ripple effects across the entire aviation ecosystem. Let's start with the airplane itself, the A321XLR. XLR stands for extra long range. The A321 family has been around for decades in various forms. The Classic, the Neo, and the LR, which was the long range variant. Each step added capability. The XLR is the furthest evolution of that idea. Airbus gave this airplane something its predecessors didn't have, a rear center tank that is structurally integrated into the fuselage, not a bolt-in auxiliary tank, not a quick change setup, a semi-permanent fuel tank that lives in the belly and significantly increases how much fuel the airplane can carry without sacrificing the cabin configuration that passengers expect.
How significant?
The A321XLR has a published range of approximately 4,700 nautical miles. 4,700 nautical miles, let that settle for a moment. The original A321neo, the standard long-range narrowbody that's been doing the work for the last decade, maxes out around 3,400 nautical miles under optimal conditions. The XLR adds over 1,000 nautical miles of range. That's not incremental. That's a different capability class. To put that in perspective, New York to London is roughly 3,400 nautical miles. The standard Neo can technically reach it under ideal conditions, but you're flying with the fuel caps on tight and you don't have much flexibility. The XLR does it comfortably with reserves, with payload. That's why Iberia was the launch customer for this aircraft. The Spanish carrier took delivery of the first production A321XLR in 2024 and immediately put it to work on transatlantic routes from Madrid. European carriers have been watching that deployment very closely. Air Canada is now telling us they're ready to commit to it in North America. Three routes to the United States, Los Angeles and Miami confirmed, with a third in the mix from a Canadian hub perspective. You're looking at routes like Toronto to Los Angeles, Montreal to Miami, or some combination of those pairings. These are not short hops. Toronto to Los Angeles is pushing 2,000 miles. Toronto or Montreal to Miami is in that same range. And the question you have to ask yourself, as someone who understands aircraft performance, is why would an airline use a narrowbody for those routes when they've been flying widebodies? The answer is capacity and economics, and those two things are almost always in tension. Here's what you need to know about thin route economics, because this is something that matters even if you never set foot on a commercial airliner. Airlines have long faced a problem. Some city pairs have real demand, but not enough demand to fill a widebody aircraft. A Boeing 767, an Airbus A330, these are 200-plus seat airplanes. When you're flying a route where the sustainable demand is, say, 150 passengers a day, putting a widebody on it means you're either flying half full, which destroys your unit economics, or you're flying it once a day and forcing your passengers to work around a single daily departure. Neither option is great. The alternative has historically been to connect those passengers through a hub, route everyone through Toronto, through Montreal, through a major airport, put them on a widebody going across the pond or across the continent. Passengers don't love it. Connections mean delays, missed bags, longer travel times, but that's what the economics demanded. The A321XLR changes the math, a narrowbody with 4,700 miles of range, configured for somewhere around 180 to 200 seats and burning dramatically less fuel than a widebody on the same route. That's a tool that lets an airline say, we can now fly this route point to point profitably without needing a full widebody's worth of seats to make the numbers work. For Air Canada, putting the XLR on routes from their Canadian hubs to Los Angeles and Miami is a direct expression of that philosophy. These are leisure routes, business routes, Routes where Canadian travelers historically had to connect somewhere or accept wide-body service that wasn't always well utilized. The XLR gives Air Canada the flexibility to fly more frequencies, protect their yields, and offer their passengers something closer to a direct service on routes that might not have justified it before. Now, from a technical standpoint, and I know there are pilots in this audience who want to talk about what's actually different about flying this thing, the A321XLR isn't a radical departure from the A321neo in terms of handling. The airframe is fundamentally the same. You've got the fly-by-wire system, the same wing, the same CFM LEAP 1A or Pratt & Whitney geared turbofan engine options. The type rating is aligned with the broader A320 family, which is enormously valuable for airlines from a fleet commonality standpoint. You don't have to spin up a separate training program for a new type. Pilots who fly the NEO can transition to the XLR with a differences course. But what is different is the center of gravity management. When you're flying with a fully loaded rear center tank, you've got fuel in a place that affects how the airplane balances throughout the flight. The fuel burn sequence, the order in which the airplane consumes fuel from its various tanks, is carefully managed by the fuel management system to keep the center of gravity in the optimal envelope for efficiency throughout the entire flight. This is automatic on the airplane, but it's something pilots need to understand when they're doing their pre-flight planning and weight and balance work. The rear center tank introduces variables that didn't exist on earlier variants. The headline doesn't tell the whole story. The headline here says, Air Canada is deploying a new Airbus on some US routes. The actual story is that we're watching a transition in commercial aviation, where the boundaries between narrow-body and wide-body capability are being deliberately pushed. Airbus has been doing this with the A321 family for years. Boeing is watching, and you can be sure they're thinking about what the answer looks like on the narrow body side of their own lineup. This matters to the broader aviation community for a few reasons. First, airports. When airlines transition routes from wide body to narrow body service, it affects gate utilization, ground handling, and even terminal capacity planning. A 767 at an airport takes up a specific gate, a specific ground crew footprint, a specific set of jet bridge requirements. When you switch that to a narrow body, even one as capable as the XLR, the airport operations change. For pilots operating into airports like Los Angeles International or Miami International, what the airlines are flying affects traffic patterns, gate availability, and how the overall operation flows. More narrow-body rotations on a route that was previously served once or twice a day with a wide-body can mean more departures, more arrivals, more traffic complexity. Second, the engine manufacturers. When Airbus extends the range of a narrow-body and opens up new route categories for it, that's a vote of confidence in the engine platforms that power it. CFM International and Pratt & Whitney both have significant stakes in the A321XLR's success. These are high-bypass turbofan engines designed for efficiency at cruise altitudes and speeds appropriate to a narrowbody, a segment of the market that is now doing things those engines weren't originally designed to do for extended durations over oceanic routes. That's a real engineering challenge that both of those manufacturers have had to address, and the fact that the airplane is in service and flying transatlantic missions is validation that they've done it. Third, and this is the piece I find most interesting from an aviation history perspective. We are watching the definition of long-range capable expand in real time. When the original A321 entered service in the early 1990s, it was a workhorse, a short-haul, medium-haul narrowbody. To say in 1993 that one day a derivative of that airplane would be flying across the North Atlantic or deep into South America on scheduled service would have sounded optimistic. The incremental evolution of the airframe over 30-plus years, updated engines, aerodynamic refinements, new materials, smarter fuel management systems, has quietly built a capability that fundamentally reshapes what airlines can do with a single-aisle airplane. Air Canada is among the first North American carriers to commit publicly to this deployment, and you can expect others to follow. The economics are compelling enough that every major network carrier on the continent has to be modeling whether the XLR fits their route map. For those of you flying general aviation, and I know that's a significant part of this audience, there's a lesson here that applies at any scale. Range is almost always a function of smart engineering more than raw size. The pilots who fly the A321XLR aren't flying a bigger airplane than the pilots on the standard NEO. They're flying the same airplane with better fuel management, a more integrated tank system, and a performance envelope that's been thoughtfully extended by people who spent years solving the specific problems that stood between the NEO and 4,700 miles of range. That philosophy, solve the specific limiting problem, extend the capability without starting over, is one we know well in general aviation. It's how you get an airplane like the Cirrus SR-22T out of the SR-22. It's how experimental builders take an airframe design that works and push it into higher performance territory by addressing the specific bottlenecks. The engineers at Airbus who designed the rear center tank integration for the XLR were doing at a much larger and more complex scale. What good aviation engineers and mechanics have always done, they found the constraint and they removed it. Air Canada expects to begin operating the A321XLR on these US routes later this year. Exact scheduling and the third route haven't been locked down publicly as of this broadcast, but the airline's commitment to the type is clear. They've taken delivery of initial aircraft, their crews are in training, and the operational plan is in place. Watch for how this airplane performs on those routes over the next 12 to 18 months. If the economics bear out the way the projections suggest, and if passenger response to single-aisle service on longer routes is as strong as carriers like Iberia have found in Europe, this deployment could mark the beginning of a significant shift in how Canadian carriers approach medium-haul international flying. Sources today include Simple Flying and Airbus's published performance data for the A321XLR family. More at radiohangar.com. This is Tower. Stay ahead of the airplane.